Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome back to FST on Fantasy Sports Radio, hour number two. Maurice Moten coming up here in a minute. But first, if you want to go to a 2018 World Series game, tune into the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Until Tuesday, as we'll be playing the DKMS Trivia Challenge for your shot to call in with a chance to attend the Fall Classic in person. The number to play is 844-843-6879. That's 844-84-FNTSY. The contest is sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. While 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, nearly 14,000 each year, must rely on benevolent stranger to step up and donate. So find out how you can help the cause and go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. It's the DKMS Trivia Challenge now through July 17th. Call in and win. So excited to have Maurice Moten on. You can find him on Twitter at Mo Moten. That's M-O-E Moten, M-O-T-O-N. He's a breaking news team for the NFL, NBA, NCAA, and a live stream writer at Bleacher Report. And he is the Raiders NFL writer at NFL Spin Zone, which we're happy to talk to him about today. Mo, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you coming on.
I appreciate you having me on. I'm usually talking Raiders at 10 p.m. at night because of the whole West Coast thing, but it feels good to be on the East Coast at 10 a.m. As you know, New York is like to get things done early, so good to be.
Yeah, exactly right. To the early bird, go the worm. So I appreciate you coming on. And, you know, look, this is an really, I said earlier in the show, two of the most compelling storylines in all of the NFL this year reside in the AFC West. Pat Mahomes with the Chiefs really trying to take the reins of a playoff team. But the other one is obviously the John Gruden placement at head coach with the Oakland Raiders. And what is your initial reaction to him coming in? Obviously, the players know who he is, but many of these players are younger. They know him more as an announcer than a coach. So how has that dynamic seemed to play out for you and the coaches adapting to John Gruden?
I feel it's a positive. I know a lot of people have made fun of John Gruden for the 1998 comment, but I think it was more of a jokey thing. He put it out there knowing people are going to scrutinize every word he's going to say. So I wouldn't take that 1998 comment to the bank. What I will say is it's good for Carr to have an offensive mind at the head coaching position. He had Del Rio, who obviously has a defensive background. I know Olsen's coming back. So people are saying, well, Carr is switching coordinators again. Technically, it's his third corner because this is Olsen's second stint with Carr. But we all know Gruden is running the show, so we can kind of say, well, it's kind of his fourth offense because we know Gruden's going to oversee that. But I think his enthusiasm is infectious with the team. You see that a lot of reports players are like, well, I came here because of Gruden's personality. You know, the type of plan he laid out, players want to play there. And I know players wanted to play there before because the Raiders had a winning season in 2016. But now after a down season, you wonder if that luster kind of wore off a little bit. Gruden steps in and he projects that fire. Players want to go out there and play well for him. And you heard that a lot with Doug Martin, who's a native in that area. And he came in saying, well, I want to play in front of my home ground. And Gruden basically got me in the mood and said, look, I'm out here off a down year. I had two good years, 1,400 yards rushing. But, you know, I can do something in silver and black. And I think, again, Gruden's attitude is apparent. And I read a report saying that whereas Del Rio and Ken Norton were more rah-rah guys, Gruden's kind of more in space. He will pull you aside and say, look, this is what we need done. This is what you need to fix. And I think players will take to that coaching, and it's going to have a good effect on the entire team.
Maurice, obviously you're optimistic then about Gruden coming in, and I think that's totally fair. I don't think that people should be, you know, dug in too deep, whether it's going to be terrible or whether it's going to be great. But do you have at least one thing that you are a little bit concerned about with Gruden entering, obviously, his first year back in a very long time?
Obviously, the layoff is something to think about, how he adjusts. Of course, he's been close to the game because obviously you all know he's been in the Monday night football booth, so he's had access to coaches and how teams do things. But it's totally different when you actually have to be down there on the sideline to actually do the job. You know, clock management has been a big thing with some of the best NFL coaches. I heard you guys talk about it with Andy Reid, one of the most respected coaches in the league. So you have to wonder how he's going to fare once he gets down to it and he has to actually do it, how he handles things on the field. But that's why you have the coaching staff there. And you would hope that coaching staff can fill in the gap for him when he's a little rusty, because you know what's going to happen. And that's why Greg Olsen, Paul Gunther, Bashad, those guys are going to be very important in helping Gruden kind of reacclimate himself back into the league. So, yes, I do understand how people could say, well, that layoff could be a problem. I you guys mentioned Dick Vermeil and Joe Gibbs did it. But I would say Gruden is 54 years old. He's not some old fuddy-duddy. People make him out to seem like some old grandpa coming out from the mountains with his grandchildren, and he doesn't know football. He's probably forgot more football than a lot of us need to know. So, yes, it is a concern, but I think it's probably going to take some time for him to get used to it, and that's, you know, you worry about a slow start. For, at most, you worry about a slow start, and then the Raiders may be picking up later in the season.
So we're with Mo Moton. You can find him on Twitter at Mo Moton. That's M-O-E-M-O-T-O-N. Raiders NFL writer at NFL Spin Zones. Pumping out a lot of good information on his Twitter feed, from everything from mustard-covered pizza to the Raiders to a lot of other stuff, which is horrendous, by the way. As a native New Yorker, I'm offended by that. But look, I think you make an interesting point, too. Andy Reid and John Gruden, John Gruden's best friend in coaching, outside of his brother, I assume, is Andy Reid. So it would be interesting for them to face off a couple of times during this season. But let me get to the real big story when it comes to fantasy football, when it comes to the progression of this offense, which regressed last year. Amari Cooper was a big focus of that. But it really comes back to Derek Carr and getting him back into a position where he is seen as a top-flight NFL quarterback, at least in that second or third tier of NFL quarterbacks. Do you feel like he's in a good position to bounce back with a revamped receiving core to be successful this season?
Absolutely. I actually wrote an article just last night, stayed up pretty late for it, saying that Derek Carr is prime for a bounce back season. You just mentioned it. They revamped the wide receiver core. You added Martavis Bryant when he traded third round pick four. Jordy Nelson, a lot of people are, let me just take a quick timeout on Jordy Nelson. And I'm sick and tired of people saying, oh, Jordy Nelson's too old. He's 32 years old. Let me tell you who led the league in touchdown receptions through, I believe, 5-6 weeks in the season. It was Jordy Nelson. And then Aaron Rodgers, of course, went down. He had Brett Hundley come in. Brett Hundley threw 10 passes before the 2017 season. So, of course, Jordy Nelson's numbers dropped off. And a lot of people want to look at the stats and say, well, he dropped off. Is this the beginning of the end for him? And I'm saying, well, of course, he lost his starting quarterback. Now, Derek Carr isn't Aaron Rodgers. A lot of people compare him to Aaron Rodgers, but Derek Carr is a lot closer to Aaron Rodgers than he is Brett Hundley. So let's just get that straight. But again, back to Carr himself, it's going to be a critical year for him. It's well documented that he struggles with pressure up the middle. Second half of a game, sometimes he'll struggle. But he did have seven game-winning drives in 2016. Now, I know that that's kind of an anomaly in the NFL. You're not going to ever have that consistency with game-winning drives, and that usually means you're playing from behind. But Carr can face pressure when, in a critical moment, he can pull out a touchdown pass. You saw that in Week 7 against the Kansas City Chiefs last year, even in a bad season. He could take his team down and score a touchdown. Now, again, as I said, with Gruden being an offensive mind running the show, I think it's great for Carr. You're not going to have a defensive-minded head coach like Jack Del Rio. You're not going to have a first-time play call like Todd Downing calling the shots. You got a guy who studies offenses, who has a passion for developing QBs and John Gruden. And I think that's great for Carr. I actually think he's going to eclipse 4,000 yards for the first time in his career. He came close in two seasons, 2015 and 2016. I believe he would have crossed 4,000 in 2016 had he not got hurt in Week 16 when Trent Cole took his leg out. But again, I think, yes, he's going to have about, I would say 30 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. Carr doesn't throw that many interceptions. Even in a bad year last year, I believe he had I believe it was 13. So he's not going to get you in a lot of trouble. Gruden did talk about running how Carr ran a no-huddle offense very well at Fresno State, so I would expect the Raiders to have more plays, which means more production if you have a high-powered offense, which I think they do. And Carr's numbers are going to inflate a little bit. Now, again, with more plays, you may have a little more exceptions, but I think Carr is careful enough where he won't get the Raiders into too much trouble.
Well, let me ask you about these running backs then, because the big question is really Marshawn Lynch and Doug Martin, and is one of these guys going to pull away? Lynch last year, I would say, is pretty good. On 207 carries, was averaging 4.3 yards per, got up to 7 rushing touchdowns. Doug Martin, as you mentioned before, determined to find his footing and, you know, find some consistency there. Do you think that one of these guys is going to pull away from the other, and if so, who?
I think Marshawn Lynch is going to be the lead ball carrier. I know there was some talk out of OTAs that Doug Martin could cut into Marshawn Lynch's workload, but I'm not buying it too much, just because if you watch the end of the last season, Marshawn Lynch is pretty good. But if you look at Gruden's history, he's only had 2 1,000-yard rushes in 11 years, and that was Tyrone Wheatley in 2000, I believe Cadillac Williams in 2005. So I feel like Marshawn Lynch and Doug Martin will split, I would say, at 60-40. As far as their workload, and then you still have DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard, as long as they're still on the roster, mixing in too with a bit of carries. Last year, you have to understand the discrepancy between Lynch and Washington, who's second leading rusher in rush attempts. Lynch had 207 rushes, Washington had 57. That gap between the top rusher and the second rusher is going to tighten a bit with Martin there, assuming he makes the roster. But looking at Lynch to be a little bit under 1,000, only because, again, I think Gruden has shown history to split those carries about 60-40, in most cases, barring injury. I would put Marshawn Lynch at about 900 yards, but I think he's going to get a lot of touches near the goal line, of course. I think he's going to have about 9 touchdowns. Martin is good for a flex position in your fantasy league because he can also catch the ball. Marshawn can too, but I think that's going to be more for Martin, Washington, and Jason Richard. So I could see Marshawn about 900. I could see Doug Martin in the 500 to 600 mark range for rushing yards.
Yeah, Marshawn only with 20 catches last year. To move over to the receiving core, you touched on Jordy Nelson, and I do think he's being overlooked to some extent. But I want to get your thoughts on some really arguably the most confounding player in all of fantasy last year, and that was Amari Cooper. Obviously, Carr had some struggles, and they directly impacted Amari Cooper, who had struggles of his own, hanging on to the ball. A little bit of a stronger close late, but he had missed some games, not to mention that he was largely unproductive outside of a monster performance in Week 7, which, frankly, and I know this happened to me, fantasy owners had benched him leading into that game, and he goes 11 for 210 and two touchdowns. So it's an odd thing because he was one of the only receivers in NFL history to have 2 1,000-yard receiving seasons before his 23rd birthday, and then last year it cratered into a 48-catch, 680-yard season. So thoughts on Amari going into this year?
Two sides of the coin for Amari Cooper. I would give him a mulligan last year because outside of Jared Cook, the entire Raiders offense, including that offensive line, didn't look good under Todd Downing, again, who was the first-year play caller. So I would look at that year and say, well, you know, the coaching staff wasn't too efficient, didn't optimize that talent. But the worry about Amari Cooper, you mentioned it, are drops. And he had the drops problem in his first year, corrected in his second year, came back last year. So I don't know, you know, if the pattern holds, he won't have drops this year. We hope. The Raiders fans would hope. But Gruden has already said Amari Cooper is going to be the bane of that offense. So he's going to see a majority of the targets. I would say Cooper, in terms of fantasy, has the largest sliding scale because if those drops do come back, it could hurt his numbers. You also have to understand Cooper has never been a big touchdown guy. And Cooper has bulked up over the past few seasons. I don't know if it's about being able to muscle defenders in the end zone, because the word out was that he can't take physicality. If you're physical with him, he'll kind of shrivel up a little bit. So we'll see how that pans out. But he's never had more than 7 touchdowns in a single season. That was last year. His 2 good years, he had 6 and 5. So if I'm picking a Raiders wide receiver, if you want a safe pick, I think you go with Jordy Nelson over Amari Cooper. But Amari Cooper has the highest upside because if he is catching the ball and he does up his touchdown total, he could reach about 1,200 yards and have like 9 touchdowns, which is a solid production line for him. But again, I feel like Jordy Nelson would be safe because I think he's going to be a red zone target, similar to what Michael Crabtree was over the last 2 years.
And then I guess the biggest question for this team, at least, you know, as we follow them throughout training camp, is going to be the Khalil Mack deal. And if they get this done, any word on that deal progression, any traction there between the two sides?
Yeah, I mean, people have been tweeting me about that, pretty quiet on that front. And I've told people you're probably not going to hear anything to closer to training camp when all players are there reporting, only because, as we all know, as humans, deadlines causes urgency. And as soon as you get to a little deadline, say, okay, we have to get this done by this time, things start to move, the wheels start to turn a little bit. But I wouldn't expect to see Khalil Mack right away. And unless there's a deal done with Aaron Donald that then says, okay, we have a template for Khalil Mack that says Aaron Donald deals. Because remember, those two guys, big-time defenders who are looking for new deals. So one agent, one player may be looking for the other to strike the first deal so that they can top it. So, nothing new on the Khalil Mack front, but I do expect him to be on the field in a Raider uniform sometime, probably in August, I would say mid-August. As long as he gets on the field, I think it's a positive for the Raiders because, again, they have a new coaching staff. You have something there. They have a plan set up for him, but you have to get on the field and at least see the game plan, so see where he fits in.
Now, it is a team that made a ton of off-season acquisitions. They obviously changed the coaching staff. They drafted a right tackle in the first round. Jordy Nelson, Martavis Bryant, they have made a lot of – they're going through a lot of transition in an effort to try to get back to the top of this division. So what are your expectations? Do you think they have the opportunity to win this division outright or at least challenge here for a playoff spot?
Raiders fans are going to cringe a little bit, but I have to be honest here. I think the Chargers, top to bottom, have the best team in that division. You have to understand, anytime you bring in a new coaching staff, the coach staff is going to bring in their people, see what works and see what doesn't. It's kind of a trial period. They won't tell you it's a trial period, but it is. And this is why you get a lot of recruiting brought in, a lot of older guys, to see what the younger guys have. Because if the younger guys can't beat up these 30-year-olds, then he's probably going to dump them off or trade.
Good stuff from Mo Moten. We'll be back right after the break.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Little Beatles on a Sunday morning. Good stuff from Mo Moten. I know we got jammed up a little bit late at the end of that segment, but he was giving us great information there. He's a Raiders NFL writer at NFL Spin Zone. Please follow him on Twitter at Mo Moten, MoeMoton. So really good stuff there, Kev, out of him. And I'm in line with his thinking. I think the Chargers do have the best top to bottom. And I think it plays into what you were saying earlier about the Raiders' chances. There's going to be a little bit of a maelstrom at the bottom of the playoff shuffle in the AFC. I think right now, let's just say everybody's healthy, which clearly won't happen, but let's just say they are. Pats, Steelers, Jags, Chargers. There's your division winners, right? Mm. I'm not absolutely on the Jags, but that's where I would put it right now. I just think they'll play enough of a controllable style and good enough defensively to win that. I have the Titans in as a wild card going back to the playoffs. But then you got Texans, Chiefs, Raiders, Ravens. That's probably my next group. And any of those could make it.
Yeah, I think one of the things, and we don't have to get deep into this, right? But when you're projecting year to year, you have to keep in mind the variance that just comes in football. Last year, the NFC, every year, you know, six teams make the playoffs. Last year, there was only one team in the entire NFC that was a repeat team. That was the Atlanta Falcons. In the AFC, I think there were only three, with the Pats, the Steelers, and the Chiefs. So you have to keep that in mind that there's going to be movement, which is why I think that it does line up well for the Chargers, right? Because this is probably the year that they break in. It's why I'm a little bit cautious on Jacksonville's side, and it's why I think that there can be some optimism for a team like the Raiders, and we'll get there, but even a team like Denver. And on Oakland's front, I think what is so interesting with this team is really going to be, does this offensive line come back to form? When that offensive line was playing at that extreme level in 2016, they were always able to just at least win those close games. But then you look back on it, why were these games so damn close? Because he had the weapons and he had the protection. So I do think what it more than anything, more than Gruden, more than the offensive line, is probably just going to be Derek Carr. And maybe it takes Gruden to pull that out of him. But that really does feel like the big thing. Does he take that step forward? Because in that 2016 season, there were some people saying, should he be in the MVP running? Is he the future face of this league? If you could have your pick of any young quarterback, is it Derek Carr? Obviously, last year fell off quite a bit from that conversation. Can he now reassert himself in it?
Look, the Derek Carr thing is...
I agree.
Is really, I've never been in on him the way other people were in on him. It's not to suggest he's not going to be a starting quarterback for a while, but I don't know that he's going to make the leap that other people are expecting him to make. Let's just talk about it in fantasy terms for a second, just so we can give everybody a sense of where he ranks. Go to my trusty Fantasy Pros right here, rankings of QBs. So, Rodgers, Wilson, Brady, Newton, Watson, Wentz, Breeze, Cousins, Stafford, Roethlisberger, Luck, Rivers. That's your top 12. I haven't mentioned Derek Carr yet. Garoppolo, Mahomes, Ryan, Mariota, Goff, Smith, Prescott, and Derek. I made him German. Derek Carr is the 20th, like a fifth tier guy they have here. I could obviously quarrel with Pat Mahomes being 6 in front of him and Deshaun Watson being 15 in front of him. I think that's a lot of hype there. But that being said, I think that's indicative of how people don't trust him or don't trust Gruden or don't trust the offense as a whole. Derek Carr's your 20th fantasy QB. The Raiders are going to have some issues. Like Mo said it, he hasn't thrown for 4,000 yards yet in his career. So what kind of a leap are we expecting him to make? Say he does get to fourth, and granted he did get hurt at the end of the one season. So I'm conceding that, you know, it's part of the evaluation, but Derek Carr, from as soon as he broke into the league and he played early, as soon as he broke into the league, was throwing a lot of short passes.
Yes.
His yards per attempt were always on the low side of things. So I just don't know. I've said, you and I have broken this down. I'm sorry, I'm stumbling over my words, but you and I have broken this down quite a bit in the past of the quarterbacks that you can look to in a year or two, and are they still going to be the starter? I think they're very committed to Carr, clearly, from a monetary standpoint.
Yeah.
He's going to start all the way through this year and probably all the way through next year. But if it's the same old Derek Carr that we saw last year for the next 2 years, like, you got to move on.
Here's my favorite anecdote. I believe I heard it on a podcast where someone heard it from someone else. And this is how they describe Derek Carr, and I've never been able to get it out of my head since I heard it. Brett Favre skill set, Alex Smith mindset. And maybe it's a little unfair to Alex Smith, but basically the ability to put the ball anywhere on the field, especially down the field, but continually taking the check down, the underneath stuff. And when I heard that, again, I try to focus more on watching Derek Carr, and the ball's out of his hands so quickly. But it's not in that Tom Brady way, where it's like he just immediately knows where to go. It's as if he's just the first person that he sees is where he's going with the football. And I look at his wide receiver group this year, and there needs to be patience there. Jordy Nelson has had a lot of success in his career downfield. We know Martavis Bryant is explosive, and Amari Cooper offers explosiveness as well. So I really do think that could be the make-or-break thing here. Listen, there's nothing that surrounds Derek Carr that you would say, well, that's the reason why he can't end up winning MVP. There's the offensive line is in place. The receivers are there. It's up to him to elevate them to that lead. And the combination of Lynch and Martin, fantasy-wise, maybe isn't all too exciting, but there's enough there to the run game has to be respected by opposing defenses. So, you know, you've said go ahead.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. Look, the offensive line's a good offensive line. They didn't play up to snuff last year, but 2 years ago they were awesome. They added a right tackle, which I've said many times in the past. I'm all for teams going for an offensive lineman in the first round if you feel like the guy's talented. He's a local. He's a California. He played college football at UCLA, so relatively local. But so they're trying to shore up that line. They now have a pretty interesting running back committee. I think Mo laid it out pretty good. Marshawn Lynch's gap is going to close. You know, maybe it gets up around the 200 touches again, 227 touches last year. Maybe it gets up to 200. You back off that a little bit, seed some of those carries and touches over to Doug Martin. Rashard and Washington are there as a pretty good unit of four. You wonder how many touches those other two guys get. But are they going to ball control it a little bit more? Is he not airing it out as much? How many pass attempts did he have last year? He had the team had 558 passing attempts. That was 15th in the league. Let me see. Let me make sure how many Derek Carr have of those. Ugh, sorry. But net yards per pass attempt was 6.2. That was 13th in the league. So here's a big issue that the team had last year. I'm sorry, I'm having all kinds of computer issues as I'm trying to read this to you. But his net yards per pass attempt, 6.5, average yard per pass attempt is 6.5. And he threw the ball 515 times, 62.7 completion percentage. The obvious issue was the 22 touchdowns to 13 interceptions. It's not the ratio that you're looking for, obviously, in a successful offense. Now, part of this, too, you always have to look at the totality of it, and we do as much as we can in these relatively brief segments, but the defense also didn't turn the ball over at all. They were 30th in the league in turnovers. They forced 9 fumbles and only 5 interceptions. That's 14 total turnovers, less than 1 per game. So it was not an opportunistic defense last year, despite all the talent that's on it with Mack and a couple of first-round picks in Conley and Bruce Irvin is obviously there long term. So they were not good about letting other teams. That's why Del Rio got fired. First of all, regression of Carr. They go 6-10. Also, the defensive coach should not force any turnovers. They're 30th in the league in average drive time, opposing drive time, meaning the defense is on the field, is less effective. We're not turning the ball over. And we have Marshawn Lynch in this good offensive line. So what are we doing here? Like, that's kind of, I'm sure that was part of the discussion in evaluating it. But I've been rambling. The point is that I just don't know Derek Carr is ever going to get to the level that a lot of Raiders fans want him to be at.
Yeah, and the thing about this Raiders team is Derek Carr isn't the only question mark. It is a team of uncertainty. And that's one of the things, right, that I think why we're going through these previews. These aren't absolute. It's kind of like primers, right? Just trying to figure out what are the important questions to ask around these teams and finding out, you know, the answers as much as you can. But there are certain things that, you know, are going to make or break this season. And you mentioned the running back group as well. I mean, Marshawn Lynch was good last year. And we know there's potential for Doug Martin. And if this offensive line can get back to form, that is huge. You know, they're returning starters last year. Every single one of them took a drop from the year 2016 to year 2017. So it would indicate one of two things had to happen, right? Either they played well above their heads and they came back to where they belong, or it was just a down year as a whole and there was just a little bit of a regression, and you can maybe expect now a lot of them moving back up to where that 2016 form is. Maybe it's somewhere in the middle, but that is very important for this team, is where that offensive line can go. Because if the protection is there for Derek Carr, then he can continue to push the ball downfield. And Marshawn Lynch and Doug Martin are guys that can hit the hole hard, but they need to have that initial hole there. They're not necessarily the most elusive backs in terms of making guys miss. Obviously, you know, we've seen Beast Mode before, carry people and things of that nature, but you want to get him to the second level to be able to use that brute strength and have then Doug Martin kind of be used in that similar fashion. And then, you mentioned the defensive side of the football, and that's where you have to start to see who steps up. Is Gary and Conley able to make that jump from year one to year two? Maybe shut down corner is a little bit of a stretch, but can he be a top 16 cornerback, something in that range? Does Carl Joseph take another step forward, who's been pretty good?
I love Carl Joseph
in his
as
first
a player.
2 years.
So that's going to be an interesting thing to me as those two continue to grow together. I really love Joseph. He's coming into his now third season. He was hurt really during he had like surgery before his rookie season, so he was never fully healthy. But it will be interesting to me in his third season. A lot of guys make a jump in their third year, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see his name more. They need to force more turnovers. You can't pick off five passes in 16 games with all this talent all over the field. So Marshawn Lynch last year was the 23rd running back at the end of the year. He's currently ranked 29th, according to his ADP on Fantasy Pros right now. I'm not targeting him in any way. If he was my third running back, I'd be okay with that. I'm not moving away from him. That offensive line is good enough. There's enough talent on the roster. He should see the ball about 200 times. I can handle that.
What's Doug Martin's ADP?
Third running back for me. It is 54th, so draftable in a 12-team league, but he is towards the end of it. You know, he's a running back six, basically, for a lot of people.
And look, I think it's difficult to draft assuming or projecting injury. But when you look at the value, right, between the two guys, and there's obviously some gap there between their ADPs. Marshawn Lynch is going to be entering what is his 11th or 12th season. And whether he can play a full 16, I think, is certainly a valid question entering his age 32 season. So maybe then you could get some value out of Doug Martin. Again, you hear that. He's in the 50s when we're talking about running backs. So that's just a guy that's going to be on your bench that could have upside. And if they are splitting, maybe he does have some week-to-week value. And look, maybe he ends up overtaking the job from Marshawn Lynch as much as Doug Martin.
Yeah, like if you're doing – you played right into what I was going to say. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, sure.
But you played right into what I was going to say. If you're doing a zero RB, you could even be targeting the Raiders. Like if he's the 29th running back off the board, you could be targeting the Raiders as your zero RB and even handcuff them in some way.
Yeah, I think
because you can get Martin so late and you can get Lynch late enough and you can get Martin so late that you maybe lock up the Raiders running back committee with a good offensive line. I think that's a kind of an interesting play there. I haven't done that. I haven't done a zero RB strategy yet. I'm kind of hybrid in the Scott Fishbowl League, which we'll talk about actually in the next segment. We'll get into Scott Fishbowl a little bit, my team, Kevin's team. So, but that's kind of an interesting play. Let's go to the wide receivers. I want to talk about their ADPs right now. Cooper, look, I try my best as an analyst and as a fan to not let recency bias impact me, but it is difficult in terms of Amari Cooper. I was all in last year, and I got smoked because of his 48 catches, and I did bench him in one league when he had the 11-catch, 210-yard, two-touchdown Thursday night performance. I benched him flat out, and it was like a 50-bomb, 50-burger, as our friend Drew Dinkmeyer from Daily Roto likes to say. And I benched him. I lost, obviously, because of that. And then I played him in one league, and I lost anyway. And I played against him in another league, and I won. It was a really weird – it's one of the weirdest fantasy football weeks and weirdest player dynamics. But he's the 16th receiver off the board. So mid-range wide receiver too. I think it's okay. I think he'd absolutely outperform that. But I think he's probably right in that range. He's going right behind Diggs and Fitzgerald, and he's right in front of Jeffrey and Robinson. I think that's about – where I would have him, because you can't back off of it too much. He's still, the guy still put up crazy numbers in his first 2 years. He had a bad year. Raiders had a bad year. As far as Jordy is concerned, let me look at that. Jordy right now. Yeah. So Jordy is like a mid-range wide receiver four, 43rd, right behind Sterling Shepard and Julian Edelman, who's going for crazy value right now, and Rishard Matthews and Kenny Stills right in front of him. So I think if you're talking to Mo Moten, Jordy Nelson's the guy he wants. In the entire Raiders offense, Jordy Nelson's the guy he wants because you're getting him late, and he thinks he could be really good and a red zone threat.
Yeah, I think Amari Cooper could end up being, and I'm not saying he's definitely going to be. Again, we have to wait and see, and I'll figure out projections a little bit as we get closer. Amari Cooper could end up being that Todd Gurley guy, right? That big down year. Maybe a little bit had something to do with the system. You always say, go back to the previous year's draft positions. Amari Cooper might end up giving some serious value for fantasy players this year.
Yeah. Martavis Bryant right behind Mike Williams to Tyrell Williams at 61st. Come back, we'll talk about the Raiders and Scott Fishbowl next.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Just a top out of Sean Angle. Playing some Beatles there. And we are going with, hang on a second, getting a little reverb. So anyway, back to the Reeds. If you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of dealing with professionals using algorithms to select hundreds of lineups and entries, try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups, ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches, and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account using the promo code FNTSY, you can elect an option to receive a 50% deposit bonus with a rollover requirement. No more dealing with late lineup scratches, no experts to compete against. Just you and the prop that you choose. Go to mybookie.ag, enter promo code FNTSY upon sign up, and choose your matchups using the Props Builder tool. That's mybookie.ag, promo code FNTSY. Okay. Sorry, got a little technical issue. I'm hearing myself back in the microphone. Sean, if you could help me out there. Kevin, if you could help me out there.
You sound great, Mike, to me.
I'll keep talking about this.
For what it's worth.
Thanks, buddy.
But yeah, while you sort that out, we're just going to say that we're talking a little bit about Scott Fishbowl. So I can just kind of give everybody a little bit of an update where I'm at in my Scott Fishbowl right now. We are waiting for the 15th round to unfold. I yesterday on this program made my pick in round 14. We kind of went through it. Is it more important to get Sam Bradford, Calvin Ridley? Should I go for some tight end help? My two quarterbacks are Brady and Rivers. I don't have that third quarterback just yet. So to give the listeners who perhaps tuned in yesterday how things have played out since I went Calvin Ridley at the third pick of round 14, it then went all the way around. The next quarterback that went was actually the fourth pick of round 15. No quarterbacks at that point. And to me, a bit of a surprise, it ended up not being Sam Bradford. And it wasn't Sam Darnold either, the two guys that which I was deliberating between. It was actually Josh McCown, the player in my league who drafted him. His two quarterbacks are Mitchell Trubisky and Dak Prescott. So, he's just looking for some of that security. I think the difficult thing with taking someone like Josh McCown is I feel very confident that through the halfway point in the season, he doesn't have that job anymore. But I also think there's a really good chance that he doesn't have that job by week one. And if he doesn't have it by week one, barring injury, He's not going to see it again. So I don't really see the value in Josh McCown kind of in any setup. I don't really know where, how your league would. I mean, obviously here we're drafting 22 total rounds, so McCown is going to go. I totally understand that. But unless I ended up having maybe Jameis Winston as one of my first two quarterbacks, which, you know, the player in this league who drafted Jameis Winston has Winston as his third, Goff and Cam ahead of him, so he's certainly set there. Unless I had Winston as one of my first two guys and I was just looking for somebody who can settle me in for those first 3 weeks, maybe then I go McCown. But again, I still feel that is a bit of a risk that he is even going to be this team's quarterback come week one. And if he is not their quarterback to start the season, barring injury, I say this again, he's not going to get that job back. So that it's a difficult spot there. We're a bit away. Again, I have the 10th pick within this fifth round. So a couple of selections to go before I would be on this clock. I don't anticipate getting on while we're still on the program. But if we got back to that point, the question would arise for me again is, do I want to add that third quarterback or do I continue to add some depth? And kind of what I'll do, and maybe it could be to a fault, but the guys that are going to pick 11 and 12, they both already have three quarterbacks. So I think that I would then be able to get my third quarterback, again, if that's still an option. If both Darnold and Bradford are on the board at that point, I could then get that option in round 16, which I like a lot. And it ended up working out a lot, and that's why George was wonderful to give me that advice of adding Calvin Ridley, because I needed that wide receiver depth. I believe, Mike, you're here, and I was just kind of talking about yesterday on the show. George helped me through one of my Scott Fishbowl picks. I have my two quarterbacks, Brady and Rivers. I don't have a third one yet. So in the third pick of the 14th round, I was looking at Sam Bradford or Sam Darnold, and I wasn't sure which one I wanted to go with there. I ended up taking Calvin Ridley. Needed some wide receiver depth. And since that point, the third pick of the 14th round, one quarterback is gone with the fourth pick of round 15, but it was actually Josh McCown as someone's third quarterback. And I was just saying, I don't really know if I could see McCown being a viable option, because when you get to your bye weeks, I don't know how likely it is he's the quarterback, but I wouldn't even guarantee he's their quarterback week one. And if he isn't the quarterback week one, I don't see him getting on the field barring injury.
Yeah, I think that's a tough one. Like, I'm in a little bit of an issue right now in Scott Fishbowl when it comes to my third quarterback, Mike Leone, who is one of our lead writers on Daily Roto. He had me, he scooped Tyrod Taylor from me when I really kind of needed Tyrod Taylor at that moment. Let's just say that. So I still am without a third quarterback. I'm waiting to be in round 13. So I'm 12 picks in. Which one are you, Kenny Powers?
Yes.
All right. I'm just coming up on your draft right now. So where's Kevin Walsh? You picked in the 10th spot, Kareem Hunt, Tom Brady, Darius Geis. Not in love with it, but it's okay. Mike Evans in the fourth round, pretty good. He was only the 9th wide receiver off the board. Wow. That's different. That's really different. It's interesting to see how the drafts play out differently. You got Derrick Henry, Phillip Rivers, is that Demaryius Thomas, Cooper Kupp, who I like this year, Jack Doyle. I've talked about him enough on the show that I see why you picked him, and Isaiah Crowell, which I have as well because we talked to the Jets beat reporter and we got all hyped up. I love Randall Cobb as wide receiver 40. I had him lined up, and I can't remember where he went. Let me see if I can find it on my draft board. Yes, he was the 35th wide receiver off the board, 40th for you. And I needed to take a tight end, so I did. I took Cameron.
Right.
Oh, no. I had taken Robert Woods right before that. Mm. So I had those two lined up. It was either going to be Woods or Cobb, and I just had Woods right in front of him. So that's why I ended up with Robert Woods, not Randall Cobb, whom I really like. I think people are overlooking that. They're excited about Aaron Rodgers and excited about Devontae Adams, but not Randall Cobb. Like, you're getting Jimmy Graham love, which I think is obscuring the fact that Randall Cobb catches a ton of balls, even in what people consider to be disappointing or down years for him. He's catching the ball a ton. So if this offense is going to be humming along, then he's going to be part of that. Jimmy Graham's not going to overshadow Randall Cobb for as far as number of catches are concerned. Could he steal a few? Sure. But I think at that kind of value, when he's a wide receiver four, I think he has the opportunity to play in that late wide receiver two, early wide receiver three range in fantasy. So anyway, yeah, I'm in a little bit of third QB hell. I was trying to line up Tyrod Taylor. Didn't work out. I ended up with Cameron Brate instead, and then came back Carlos Hyde. Now I just picked Marquise Goodwin, 50th wide receiver off the board. I'll take that value every time for Marquise Goodwin because I think there's an opportunity there for him to be really good with Garoppolo. They clicked in a short term, but my wide receiving core is pretty good. I'm not worried about that at all. And Carlos Hyde is my fourth running back. I think I'm okay there too. I've thought that as much as I think Nick Chubb has an opportunity to take over that job, I think in week one, Carlos Hyde might have it. So in a league like this, I just need guys that are going to be impactful starters at some point. Do you know what I mean? Like, Carlos Hyde is my fourth running back, but if the matchups dictate it, I could start him in front of Deion Lewis or Isaiah Crowell alongside Alvin Kamara from a week-to-week standpoint. I don't think they're all that far apart.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to just pull up your draft now, just kind of look at the quarterback situation there. But yeah, I do think that Browns situation is going to probably be a little difficult to navigate. I think Carlos Hyde is the best running back there. I guess it just becomes more of what do they want? What is the Browns' goal for this year? Right? Like, obviously, it's not lose zero or not win zero games again. But, you know, are they going to want to get a glimpse of Baker Mayfield? I guess that depends on what the record looks like, but I still think that there's a pretty good gap between the quarterback that Taylor is and the quarterback that Baker's. And there are still guys that would need to develop between the quarterback that you have in house. Like, and you also want to get the most out of guys. Like, you want to get the most out of that Jarvis contract, most out of Josh Gordon, most out of David Njoku. And to do that, you want to have the best quarterback on the field, and that should be Tyrod Taylor. And that would also then relate to, you should then have Carlos Hyde on the field. I would think he's the better option than Nick Chubb, but it becomes, I guess, what is their goal?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. During this draft, I kept coming back to Browns players as my next guy that I was going to take. They got scooped a couple times. That's okay. But right now, I'm rolling with Josh Gordon and Carlos Hyde. I had Tyrod Taylor lined up. And interestingly, Fantasy Labs, Matt LaMarca from Fantasy Labs and the Action Network, he actually took Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield. So he set himself up pretty nicely because Jameis Winston is actually his second quarterback. So he did a really nice job strategizing as he waited on QBs. He took Mariota in the fifth round, Jameis Winston 8, Tyrod Taylor 10, Baker Mayfield 12. So he spaced it out nicely and he got the Browns quarterback position. So he's good for the rest of the year. He'll have the Browns starting quarterback, whether it stays Tyrod or he switches over to Baker. So for me, I've gone around the block on this a little bit, but you were talking about basically third quarterback strategy. What do you do? This is a super flex league. It's a deep league. There's 30 quarterbacks taken in my draft. We're only 12. We're not even 12 rounds completed yet, and I need a QB. So I'm in a little bit of a world of hurt as far as who my picks are going to be, because I need to. The hard part now, to explain from a strategy standpoint, I'm unlikely to pick a quarterback from here on out that will be a starter for the whole year. But I have to do something. So the number one guy on my board, I probably shouldn't say this on air, but the number one guy I have right now, it's only about five picks to get back to me, is Sam Bradford.
Oh.
I've talked a lot about Sam Bradford probably ceding way to Rosen, and I think what's going to happen is I'm going to pick Sam Bradford and somebody else will take Josh Rosen. What I'm trying to do but there's way too much time in between, is get Bradford and Rosen. I don't mind locking up the Arizona Cardinals because I think they'll be down in a fair amount of games, so they'll be throwing. So that's not terrible. I also don't have a second tight end yet. So whatever wraps around to me, it's either going to be my second tight end who I will not divulge on air, or it might be this Cardinals situation, or it could be the Bills quarterback situation, or the Jets. All of those guys are still out there. There's still a surprising amount of value. I'm only in the 13th round. There's still a surprising amount of value to be had. You are a couple of rounds in front of me, but you can still see. It's interesting, right? Even in these deep drafts, you're like, oh, you know what? This guy's still out there, and I could see him catching a whole bunch of balls, or I could see him taking over the starting running back job at some point. So
I want to ask you
to back it up to Scott Fishbowl League. I know we talk about it all the time, but it launched earlier this week, exactly 7 days ago, or exactly 6 days ago. And it is a 900 participant league, fans and experts mixed, heavy on the experts, but some fans competing against experts. And it's a wild league. You get a half a point for first down, half a point per reception. If it's a tight end, it's a full point for a first down and a full point for a reception. So in that sense, it is highly competitive. It plays more like a best ball roto league because you're trying to put up such big numbers. And it's a super flex league. You're taking a few more chances than you might in a standard league. You can play a little bit more aggressively, but some other guys play it more conservatively because guys are being too aggressive. I'm not going around recommending Josh Gordon to everybody, but as my second wide receiver, I took a shot there. I thought that was the way to go. He's an upside guy, so why not play the guy with upside? And if he ends up dominating some targets in the Cleveland offense, maybe it's good, maybe it's average. But I'm willing to take a shot on a guy like that with supreme physical talents.
The quarterback situation that we have is actually he's kind of the same. We both have Brady. You have Matt Ryan. I have Phillip Rivers. Regardless, the bye weeks are the same. And the thing that I'm looking at with this third quarterback is I really only – would want the quarterback for 2 weeks, week 8
yeah,
and week 11. So that's why it's kind of been a little bit of difficulty for me to know where to go. I think Bradford is by far the best guy left. What is on my board likely to be left, of the guys that are available. The problem is he the quarterback week 8? I do not think that Rosen can take that job from him. I think that Josh Rosen is the best quarterback of all of them that came out as rookies. But I think that Bradford is comfortably the best quarterback ahead of any of these rookies. But how in the world does anybody feel confident that Sam Bradford is walking by week 8? And I can't be certain of that situation, but I can't be certain that Josh Rosen gets that job either. So that's why the other player that which I was looking at was Sam Darnold. Now, the reason why I ended up coming off Darnold is he shares the same bye week as Brady, week 11. So he kind of becomes moot in the purpose of drafting him, which is, again, he'll probably push me to Bradford if available where I'm drafting. Again, if he makes it back to me. But that's kind of the situation that I was going through in my head, and that's ultimately what pushed me to go to Calvin Ridley, because I looked at Bradford and I was like, if things work out for me, I'm really only using this guy for 2 weeks. And it's not like I have to start it's not a 2QB league, right? Like, it's a super flex, so I can still, I only need the one quarterback or
that's
the league.
One thing I was going to tell you is, yes, you want to take a look at the bye weeks, and I was looking at that when it came to the Browns, who also have a week 11 bye, but you have to consider that part of this draft pick is protection. You can't worry about the bye week when it's week 11 exclusively, because if somebody got hurt, you need to make sure you have someone there. Like Matt Ryan and Tom Brady play all the games until somebody tears their ACL, and then they don't. So you just have to be mindful of that. Yes, you want to line up the bye weeks, but in a league like this, don't get caught without a quarterback if somebody got hurt. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're signing. You're on whoever the pass back is right now. Blanking on it. But you understand my point. It's not just about the bye weeks. You have to make sure you have an insurance policy in case somebody goes down. So we'll come back, hour number 3, right after this.